Force Awakens is not a remake of A New Hope. What? But there's a droid on the run from evil bad guys that gets coincidentally picked up by a desert dweller who is aided by Han Solo to deliver the droid safely to the good guys. And there's another big planet destroying super death sphere. It's clearly A New Hope. And I still say no. It's a remake of all three original films.
See, oh, let's start the show! My mind is blown!
Welcome to Cord Killers, our mission to report the intel from the front lines of the cord cutting revolution so you can watch stuff. You want to watch what you want, when you want, where you want, on whatever device you want, and we're the folks who are trying to help you be able to do that. I'm Tom Merritt.
Hey, man, I'm Brian Brushwood, but more importantly, I got to give a huge thanks to Vince Power for sending us the link to this little 2.5 minute long thesis about how The Force Awakens is not a remake of The New Hope, but instead is basically recapturing the entire first trilogy. And his point is that the first act is pretty much the first act of A New Hope. The second act is pretty much the second half of Empire Strikes Back. And that the third act, yes, it is about blowing up a Death Star, but it's much closer to Return of the Jedi, because there's a ground campaign and an aerial campaign at the same time. I think he did a good job because it opens up the possibility that maybe we really will get a completely brand new story and it won't just be a retread of Empire Strikes Back.
I have always resisted this idea that The Force Awakens is a beat for beat remake of A New Hope. Yes, I've always acknowledged, of course, it has things that are very similar on purpose, but it also has Hoth, and it also has, you know, the big shafts from Empire Strikes Back. And this video just crystallizes all these thoughts that were bouncing around and not cohered into what was going on. I think this is absolutely what J.J. Abrams was doing,
right?
With The Force Awakens.
Yeah, no, yeah. And I can't believe that I hadn't heard anyone else making that claim until now. Do me a favor, just jump on YouTube and type in The Force Awakens is not a remake of A New Hope, and I think you'll be able to find that video.
You know who else is not a remake of A New Hope? Our guest today, Christy Cates, back on the show.
It would be an awkward reimagining of A New Hope. Hi, Christy. How are you?
Hi. I'm great. I'm so glad to see you guys. I feel like it's been a while. So
yeah,
I'm glad
it's
to be back.
Too long.
Thank you.
In fact, it was at the movie draft last time we actually talked, I think.
Yeah, I think you're correct. I think you're right. Yeah.
Entirely too long.
Yep,
entirely too long, but we're remedying that fact right this moment
with
our
awesome
primary target. So quite often, I hear the people outside, the throngs, saying, Tom, I don't care about ESPN. I don't care about Fox Sports. You keep shoving this down my throat with PlayStation View and Sling and all of this stuff. And I say, I bring unto you today Philo, a pay streaming service with no sports. It could also be described as Philo. None of the big broadcast networks, cable networks, all packaged together to try to have their own package. Streaming services from A&E, Scripps, Discovery, AMC, and Viacom. So no ABC, CBS, NBC, or Fox-owned networks, just everybody else.
I'm okay with this. I assume the Philo, that's got to be a reference to Philo Farnsworth, creator of the television, right? Yeah.
Yep.
Dude, I think when I read this article that you linked to us to, the Recode one, the thing that really stuck out in my mind was about halfway down, you'll see there's a graph showing the TV on the internet packages, minimum price and number of channels. Look at how many choices we have. Yes, Philo is an affordable bundle that has one of the fewest collections of channels, but it lives on this amazing spectrum where you could get anything all the way back to essentially traditional cable, all-you-can-eat television.
Yeah. You, in the United States anyway, we have more choice for television providers than we have ever had. Because, I mean, going back to the cable days anyway, right? Since cable launched, generally you've had one provider, and then the satellite services came along and maybe you had two. If you were really lucky, you had Dish, DirecTV, and maybe two cable services. Now, everybody in the country basically has six or more, depending on how you look at it. This one's $16 a month. But if you're saying, hey, you know what? I love PlayStation View for most things, but I really miss MTV. Boom, pop in to Philo for $16 one month and you get your MTV and your Comedy Central. And if you're after the month, you're like, you know what? I saw the MTV Music Awards. I don't care anymore. You can pop right out again, there's no contracts with this stuff. Christy, how does this set with you?
I mean, I think it's pretty cool. The problem that I have with my current Xfinity bundle is that it doesn't have all the channels that, you know, you guys are talking about right now. So, I mean, I don't care about sports, frankly. I really don't. I don't watch any sports at all. So to have that be something that's, you know, that it's missing, I don't really miss it. I don't miss it at all. So I'm fine with
it. I'm going to stop referring to it as a bundle and start referring to it as what do you call tied up wrists? What's that?
Wrist ties?
Wrist bindings?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Zip
tied? It's a bindle, not a bundle.
Bindle.
Because you can't get out of it, right? If you're like, oh, but I want to add this channel, you're like, I have to cancel the entire bundle, right? I have to change my entire plan.
You know, I'd hate to say it, but that's been an awful lot of my experience over the last year. I've given myself permission to sign up for services and then drop them liberally. But at any given time, it seems like I'm subscribed to two services that have overlap. But one has the benefit that the other doesn't have. So I don't know. More choices is good in general.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's better to have more than to have less. You can, like Tom just said, now we have more to pick from. So cord killers are succeeding in that we now have more actual bundles and services to pick from than we ever did before. So it can't be a bad thing, really.
By the way,
the price is good.
For the second time, I quit Sling TV over the last week. And again, it was very, very easy to quit. And
wait, you went back in?
No. I guess we talked about this last week.
Okay,
but,
yeah.
But I'm drifting on my 30-day grace period. After, because I have the rest of the month, which was awesome because I went to go watch the 30 for 30 documentary on Ric Flair, the Nature Boy, and it said, which one of these, how you want to authenticate? And I was like, oh, doggone it. And I was like, wait. And then I was able to just put in the Sling and it still worked.
You can do that with PlayStation View too.
I didn't see that on the front page of that. I suspected that was the case.
You have to go to more providers. Yeah.
Yeah. I suspected that was the case, but I definitely saw the Sling and I was like, well, let me just do this one.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I Philo will be interesting to see if it sticks around or if these companies find it's just easier to go into more popular services or if it's both. If you know, Viacom's only on DirecTV Now right now for the most part. So this is their big bet to say, well, if you really want this stuff, you're going to have to come to us. They're the driving force behind Philo. But somebody like AMC may not care. They're like, you know, you get us from PlayStation View, you get us from Xfinity, you get us from Philo. We don't care. We just want to be everywhere. And that's the thing to keep in mind is this is not settled yet. We're not like, okay, so here's how it works now. Like it keeps changing. Things keep moving. We have not reached the final form of how this is going to work.
Awesome.
You know what we have reached the final form of, though, Brian?
I hope it's not the final form. I hope it's only the beginning of a transformation to being even bigger and better.
You don't know what I was going to say, though.
Oh, what have we reached the final
form? We have reached the final form of how we like to be supported by our bosses, which is patreon.com/cordkiller.
close one there. Yeah, man, do us a favor. Why don't you join the 1,654 other like-minded cord killers just like yourself and help keep this show loud, live, and independent week after week. You guys changed our lives, wow, 3 years ago, 4 years ago now, and we just want to keep the rock rocking. With the rock block of house.
We want to make Dwayne Johnson happy. Yes. You can help us do it.
Yes. We get a lot of benefits. You guys get a lot of benefits when you subscribe over at Patreon, right, Bryce?
Yeah, you get early access to Spoiler in Time, which is our sister show about talking about all of the latest TV shows and movies in a spoilery fashion. You also get early access to that and via a RSS feed, so it's right in your podcatcher, or you can get it on YouTube early. And if we hit our magical 1850 number in patrons or dollars now, y'all wanted a money amount. If we hit that magical number, we can begin the project to go through all the old Spoiler in Time and cut out each segment about a specific show and make show specific RSS feeds so that you can go back and watch through, say, The Wire or Game of Thrones or any series that the guys have watched on Spoiler in Time in one convenient place. So it's
going to be awesome.
It's great.
Patreon.com/cordkillers. And then we'll tell you how to watch. Use your eyes. Actually, this time we're talking about a survey that Netflix conducted about how people watch Netflix. Christy, I'm curious. When you watch Netflix, how do you usually watch it?
I usually watch it in my living room, but I mean, I was reading this and I have watched it on the train before, you know, going into Manhattan and stuff because it's boring just sitting there. So I've watched it that way. The whole bathroom thing, not ever. That's pretty weird. But I mean, just Brian, I think every TV in my house has Netflix, you know, accessible on it. And then I have watched it traveling. So,
but yeah, you mostly watch it on the television.
Yeah, pretty much for the most part.
Brian, but what about you?
Mainly in the office, but which makes
so on a desktop computer then?
Yeah, but that's what makes me think this article, the interpretation of this data was clearly surprised that so many.
Well, we haven't gotten to the data part yet.
Okay,
I'm just curious how you guys watch.
All right, I watch in my office.
Okay, and like Christy, do you ever? Are there other considerations? Do you watch on your phone sometimes, or the TV sometimes, or it's
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like when I'm traveling, I'll watch on the phone, and then also I do watch. Brian mentioned I just hadn't thought about it, but if I'm doing something on the computer, I'll have it in the corner, maybe watching something. So,
see,
yeah,
I think that makes sense. Like my brother is a 3D modeler and animator working on Star Citizen, and so he's spending all day, you know, doing bone structures or whatever. This tedious kind of iterative work that doesn't require giant chunks of your brain. So it makes sense. Like it doesn't seem controversial or strange to me, the idea that he would have Netflix open, just running through stuff while he's doing this other tedious stuff.
Yeah.
Well, according to this survey, which was 37,000 adults between August and early September, 67% of people watch TV and movies in public, including on planes, buses, and as Christy mentioned, commuting. Sometimes buses are commuting. Occasionally, sometimes planes are, I guess. 26% said they have binged shows at work, not just watched a show, but binged a show. 7% worldwide admitted watching TV and movies in public restrooms.
Oh.
Not just in the bathroom, But keep in mind,
I think some people have the idea that this is destination pooping or something where it's like they're like, I'm going to go to the restroom and start up this video. That's not what I think it is. I think it's like you're out at gate 7. You have to go to the bathroom. What are you going to turn off the movie as you walk over there? No, you're going to watch it
as you
walk in, as you use the facilities, and as you then you set it down and you're watching while you're washing your hands.
Put it in your bag.
No,
pause the thing.
No.
Sounds like you might have a deep understanding of this scenario.
You might be part of the 7%.
I have to say, I don't want to say I've never done what Brian suggests because it does make sense, but I don't think I have. I'm not saying I wouldn't when I say that, all right? Because I could see myself being like, I really need to get through this episode of Justified because as soon as I get off the plane, I got to talk to Corey Killers.
You know what? As long as we're on the subject, are you going to feel better knowing that I don't watch movies while I poop, but that the odds are good that if you got an at reply from me on Twitter, there's one convenient time to spend 140 characters.
Which would you rather, Brian, do? Vote in our poll. Join the conversation.
No. Now, see, so but Christy, all of this, like, you no, guys might, no, by is... watching on the train does not seem so bad now after all that. So there you go.
Well, all of it's with headphones, I'm going to assume.
Yo, man, that would be disturbing. You go waltzing into the public restroom. You're listening to, like, you know, filthy dialogue from from Master of None or something.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think on the train with your headphones on is perfectly uncontroversial. I guess unless there were
someone can see it, they can
racy
see it, but
scenes
they can't hear
going
it.
On.
Yeah.
You
can't hear it.
The what about the what was the number of people who admitted to crying in public while binging on Netflix? I think that
is
was
that in here.
Yeah, I think there it is, crying while
a fifth, 20%.
20%. I have not had that with Netflix, but I have had that many times with audiobooks because I'm constantly listening to audiobooks.
Does a plane count as public? I'm assuming it does.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
I definitely fall in this category.
Yeah, no,
I've watched a tearjerker and just be like, so good.
Yeah, dude, I watched 12 Years a Slave on an airplane. That one, like, heavy stuff.
Yeah.
Heavy stuff.
Well, there you go, folks. So hopefully we've made a lot of you feel less alone. Or maybe wish you were more alone. depending on how you look at it. Let's talk about what to watch in Under Surveillance.
It's all about location, location, location.
Under Surveillance.
Amazon's Philip K. Dick's Electric Dreams. It's Philip K. Dick's Electric Dreams on Amazon Prime, arriving Friday, January 12th. This is kind of an anthology show. It's a little bit like Black Mirror. So Steve Buscemi, Bryan Cranston, Anna Paquin, Terrence Howard, Maura Tierney are among the stars that will be in the various episodes. January 12th, though, I kind of wish it was coming now. Well, December, this would be a great holiday break viewing for me.
Is there, do you think it's a production limitation that has them, January is not the sexiest release month of the year, right?
Yeah. I wonder if it's, it could be, right? It could be like they're just not going to be ready until then. It could also be that Amazon has other things they want to push in December. And so they're saying, hey, a lot of people will want to watch this. Let's put it in a time period when we get less viewing.
Yeah. Which would be a good credit to the robustness of the franchise. One of the nice things that I'm excited about this is that Blade Runner deviates from the original content so much that essentially this is a real opportunity to double dip into Philip K. Dick franchise. Philip K. Dick is responsible, like basically everything that he wrote that has been made into a movie has become a hugely profitable endeavor over the long term. So hopefully, yeah, I think another take on the Blade Runner universe will work for me.
The other nice thing about it too is a lot of the short stories that he's written, I don't know a ton about those, so I'm interested to see them bring those to the screen. And plus, people are now finding out more about who Philip K. Dick is as an author, as opposed to just kind of like this faint name in the background of Blade Runner. So bringing these other stories up to the forefront, and Man in the High Castle and stuff as well, is I think it's really good for him as an author, for his estate. He's getting recognition finally, which is really cool. Like a lot of extra recognition for this stuff. So that's cool. I approve.
I Can Remember It For You Wholesale is a Philip K. Dick book that was turned into Total Recall. Like, he's huge, huge hits.
Yeah.
New trailer out for A Wrinkle in Time, which is based on a book by Madeleine L'Engle called A Wrinkle in Time, which hits theaters on March 9th.
You don't say.
Yeah.
Curious.
What do you guys think? Did you see this new trailer?
I have not seen the new trailer. And let's take a quick peek at it right now. I this is one of those things I'm so sold. I'm pre-sold on it. I'm going to take my daughters to go see this.
You may already have sold. I like how they mess with the Disney logo.
Yeah. You know what? I saw the first of these trailers. I did not see the second one.
Yeah, this one just came out this week.
Yeah, they did a great job on the first one representing like that moment with the synchronized ball playing and all that stuff.
You get a lot more Chris Pine in this trailer.
I'll tell you what, man. This is a very precious property to me. I have many, many very powerful, good memories of this being kind of, one of the first introductions into science fiction concepts that that I got as a kid. And I very much want to see it done right.
I'm
the same with this. I'm right there with Brian. I mean, I've read that entire series. I've read pretty much everything Madeleine L'Engle has written in the sci-fi genre. My apprehension with it is that, like, the Narnia movie that they made, or the two Narnia movies they made, I did not really like those very much. And then they took the Golden Compass trilogy and they made one movie and abandoned the other two books. And I'm just kind of like wary of it because I love these books so much. And like Brian said, they're just a part of like, growing up and learning about sci-fi, and she's one of my favorite authors of all time. So I appreciate the cast. Like, it's making me a little bit more optimistic about it. And the visuals look really cool, but I want them to do it well. I think that's my biggest thing with that one.
Yeah.
So
I'm with you there. Bollywood megastar Shah Rukh Khan will produce but not act in a new 8-episode Netflix series called Bard of Blood, about a young Shakespeare professor living in the Indian hill station Panjgani who must return home to save both his country and the woman he left behind. It's based on a popular novel. So it's got a popular novel behind it. If you don't know Shah Rukh Khan, it's because you are provincial as far as the rest of the world is concerned. Like, he is ridiculous.
Megastar.
He is ridiculously celebrated outside of the United States, particularly in India.
Man, dude, no, that's great. And we've talked about this before, but I think one of my favorite things about the side effects of Netflix's global dominance is that we are all kind of being forced to become more multicultural and to understand that not everything has to be in English. You know, you got movies like Okja, half of it is in Korean, half in English, and it plays great. And I feel more worldly for that being the case.
And Bard of Blood's going to be in English and Hindi and a couple other languages as well.
Oh, cool. Dan Wally is pointing out that he played Kumail Nanjiani's dad in The Big Sick. So, yeah.
Now, did you guys see the movie Victoria and Abdul as well? Did you see about that?
Wait, I thought hold on. I'm reading what Dan Wally's posted in the chat. Okay. But I thought he got his actual parents to play. No, I'm thinking of Master of None.
Master of None.
I'm quietly racist, I guess. Sorry. Sorry.
Netflix, because we were talking about Netflix.
I'm
sorry, Christy, what were you saying?
Oh, no, I was just mentioning, like, this appears at an interesting time because that Victoria and Abdul movie just came out, which is about Queen Victoria's friendship with her Indian servant, where she ended up kind of treating him more like a son. And he helped her, you know, with a lot of things towards the end of her reign before her death. And then when she passed away, the family just kind of kicked him out of the country and took a lot of his privileges away that the queen had given him. But it's just interesting that those two things are coming out at the same time because that movie just started hitting theaters a few weeks ago. So yeah. It's kind of cool. You know, that different genre of movie coming out.
There's all kinds of good stuff coming out. And like you say, being exposed to all of these different localizations of Netflix, where mm-hmm. they're not just saying, we here in Hollywood are going to make an Indian film for you. They're like going to Shah Rukh Khan and saying, all right, biggest star in India, produce us a series here. And no, I don't think Shah Rukh Khan was in The Big Sick, by the way. But maybe if we all start watching more of these Netflix produced films, we'll make fewer of these mistakes, right?
It feels more global. It's nice to have these kind of, you know, getting stuff from other countries that get to.
And again, to anybody under the age of 30, realize that when we were all teenagers, like, as embarrassed as we are that we aren't aware of the whole back catalog of one of the global superstars, like, we were utterly benighted 20 years ago. You know, it's astonishing how more worldly we've all become.
Knowing about Monty Python meant you were like in the know of world television. Exactly. Back then, right? Yeah. All right. Let's talk about what we're watching. We'll start with you, Christy, because you finally got out and got to see Thor yesterday.
Oh my gosh. You guys, Thor is so, I was so impressed. I mean, I expected a good blockbuster because I love a lot of the Marvel properties and I expected it, but I don't know how they crammed so much stuff into a movie. It was bombastic. It was colorful. It was funny. And, you know, it had some serious moments with the parent and I just amazed by the whole thing. We were watching the end of the credits and there was something like, I think we lost count at 19 special effects houses. So it just showcased the amount of work and effort that went into the movie. Cate Blanchett cracked me up. Jeff Goldblum was hilarious. I was so impressed by it.
Did you enjoy Jeff Goldblum's impression of Bryce Castillo the entire movie long? Did you see that?
Christy would not get this.
Yeah, sure she would. He's clearly Bryce Castillo the entire time. I loved it as well. In fact, it's kicked off last week. I was talking about how the director, Taika Waititi, am I saying that right?
Taika
Waititi. I went back and watched What We Do in the Shadows. Next up, I'll watch Hunt for the Wilder People. His stuff is amazing.
Oh, are you talking about his vampire series? That was hilarious.
No, if you haven't seen it, it's worth watching. It's free.
I have seen it. It's hilarious.
Okay, great. Yeah, it's free right now on Amazon Prime.
Yep.
But you had to pay for Amazon Prime.
Sure. If you don't have
streaming
parent.
On Amazon Prime,
okay, fine. It's prepaid.
All three of us watched Serenity, so we will be talking about that in spoiler in time. But you've also been watching The Inhumans, which I haven't, Christy.
Oh, this is so funny. I mean, you guys know I like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. because I've been on the show before and talked about that. And this Inhumans show came out, and I thought, oh, I want to watch that. And then it turns out, I feel like they had a really tiny budget for this show, like $15 and a cheese sandwich, because it's just the effects are so not great. Some of the acting's not great. There's the actor from Game of Thrones, I think his name's Ewan Rian, and then Henry Ian Cusick from Lost is on it. So there's a couple really standout actors on it. And some of the other ones, I just feel like they're just kind of placeholding. But the thing about watching it, and I'm trying to watch as much of it as I can, it's almost like a comedy to me because of how just not great it is.
Well, is this an endorsement or?
Well, you asked what I was watching, and that's what I've been trying to watch in the episodes.
So this is not an endorsement. Like this is a confession that you're making.
Looking for laughs? You'll love how bad it is, Christy Cates.
Seriously, it's coming across more like a comedy, and I just have you guys seen any episodes of it at all?
Nope.
I just feel like they're I feel like their budget, like the storyline is okay, the dialogue is not good, and the effects are not good. So I think they could have done a lot more with the storyline if they actually had something to work with. I feel like they just don't have enough to work with, and I was disappointed, but it's still funny to watch. So
you watched
in that way.
You did watch Legion on FX, right?
Mm-mm.
Oh my goodness.
That yet.
Okay. Well, I have a gift for you. It's Legion on FX. Okay. You're going to love
good.
It. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Thank you, Ryan.
No, absolutely. Mostly what I watched this week, were videos of a 1-year-old niece, walking around after just watching her walk around. So I don't have much to add besides Serenity and Mr. Robot. Brian, what about you?
It was another busy week for me as well. Although I did make time, last night, I watched that 30 for 30 Ric Flair. It was great. All the 30 for 30 programs are just stellar, just stunning. And I'm not a sports guy. I don't particularly care about sports, but they understand that the fundamentals of storytelling, you know, it doesn't matter what the MacGuffin is. If you understand the characters and believe their story, you'll get sucked in. And they do that all the time.
Excellent. Bryce, what should we be on the lookout for?
Hey, we got a pair of picks from Mickey. This is what he writes. Hello, Killer's Crew. Arriving on CBS All Access is a U.S. production of the very successful Stan original, Stan being Australia's domestic Netflix competitor, comedy No Activity. It's got the same lead actor as the Australian version and a lot of the same production crew. And in Australia, it's being marketed as season 3, along with a bunch of new talent, including Will Ferrell and J.K. Simmons, who are executive producing. It's a great show for lovers of improv comedy. Keep up the great work, employees. Mickey W. from Brisbane, Australia. There are a ton of big-name comedians in this U.S. version. Amy Sedaris, Tim Meadows, Jason Mantzoukas. It's pretty cool. It's kind of this, like, multi... It's like a pair of cops in their car on a stakeout and a pair of criminals in a warehouse who are waiting and being goofy, and then a pair of dispatchers, 911 dispatchers, and then a pair of drug tunnelers, all of them just kind of stuck in their one scene and finding little, almost, it's kind of like Reno 911, of like people of authority being out of character for how much power that they've got in that moment. It's pretty funny, at least the little bit that I watched on Hulu, because the two Australian seasons are already on Hulu, so you could go and watch that. Two episodes of the American version seem to be out on CBS All Access, and I believe those are coming out on Saturday. So that's No Activity. Check it out.
Will Ferrell and J.K. Simmons. I mean, this is not a no-name cast by any stretch. Excellent. Got something we should be on the lookout for. Email us cordkillers@gmail.com. Now, Brian needs to send his three daughters to college, and this Black Friday is a way for you to help.
Oh, my God, Tom. It's such a weird feeling. Like, for those of you guys who don't know, Tom and I support ourselves. In addition to your wonderful patrons, we also support ourselves with separate endeavors. Tom writes books. I sell clever stuff on a little website called scamstuff.com. And this is our fifth year, our fifth season to have stuff
making it TV related.
It is
it's sweeps week here.
Our fifth holiday season, right? And I'll tell you what, man, it's a weird thing to realize, like, well, I guess a third of all the income I'll make this year will happen on these 5 days. We're getting ready for Black Friday, Cyber Monday. I'm going to tell you guys in advance, if you're not on the email list, get on the email list, because we cheat and we're going to start Black Friday a couple days early. This is where every single item in the store is discounted, most of them at the deepest discounts they'll have all year long. And everything is designed to be something that's an easy gift to give a loved one or for yourself. I really think you're going to dig it. We just heard back on Twitter the feedback from the Outlaw's Vault, the new puzzle box that we just put out. People are really digging the challenge, and I just couldn't be happier. I'm stupidly excited, and I just want to make sure you guys get in there before a bunch of stuff sells out. So get ready. Scamstuff.com this week, starting Wednesday.
Let's march on to the front lines.
Front lines!
So remember we had that report last week about Amazon maybe doing a commercial-free version, or I'm sorry, a commercial-supported version of Amazon Prime video that you wouldn't have to pay for?
Yeah, you're saying...
Well,
Amazon
spokesperson told The Verge, quote, "We have no plans to create a free ad-supported version of Prime Video."
That's fairly definitive.
So what are they really saying?
Knowing that whatever you say, people are going to try to read the tea leaves on. Like, I don't know how you phrase that in a way that doesn't cause people to think, well, what does this mean?
I mean, the door they left open is, we have no plans. They're like, maybe someday we will. We're not saying that's not going to happen, but... Yeah,
I think you're right. Vimeo announced that users can now upload video in HDR and at resolutions up to 8K. The service now supports 10-bit video and a wider color gamut. HDR playback will work on most mobile new devices with an HDR display, as well as on the Apple TV 4K. I got to admit, Tom, I on paper thought that HDR would be more impressive than it is in person. I went to Fry's Electronics. I took my daughter just to go look at screens, because that's one thing you can't simulate on your home system. And HDR didn't seem that dramatically different to me.
I showed you HDR here at my house when you were here.
Yeah, I thought maybe just it wasn't very impressive on your TV. But now I think it's just not impressive, full stop.
Yeah, Brian was nice. He didn't slam my TV. Turns out it wasn't my TV.
Yeah.
Wow, okay, so that's interesting. That is a side note to this, because some people, myself included, look at it and go, oh, yeah, no, I can see the wide color gamut. It looks much better. So this is Vimeo, assuming that HDR stays something that people want, being ahead of the play. Well, and that's the way they have continued to survive, is to always be like, hey, we freaking 8K over here. You're serious about filmmaking? Come to us.
Yeah, and this is very much on brand for them to do. They have always been about quality presentation. Whatever YouTube does, Vimeo will endeavor to be that much better, that much clearer, that much crisper.
Bloomberg is launching a 24-hour news network on Twitter December 18th. Goldman Sachs, Infinity, TD Ameritrade, CA Technologies, AT&T, and CME Group are all reportedly investing between $1.5 and $3 million each. So there's a total of around $8 million sunk into this thing to make a competitor to CNN, Fox News, et cetera, on Twitter.
Christy,
yes.
I hope I'm not a bad person. It seems to me that like this is a good idea that's just waiting for, please forgive me, a 9/11 type event to happen, because Twitter is very, very good at being there in the moment of the actual breaking news, boots on the ground reporting and so on. And I think the only thing that we haven't seen is an event that is that electric that the whole world is like, no, CNN is not up to the minute enough. I need something, you know, that Twitter fast.
Are they intending to do this where they have so many people on the ground? Just like, I mean, on Twitter, things break so quickly because it's ordinary people that are right on the scene of whatever is happening. So are they intending to just kind of have a network of reporters that are everywhere all the time to keep this Twitter just constantly moving stuff?
I'm going to guess that because it'll be a Bloomberg style presentation, right? I assume it'll look a lot like the Bloomberg channel. But again, that's just me guessing.
Yeah. Well, they have 50 reporters working on site. And I'm sure they have their partners as well, but I'm still curious how it's really going to roll out, because it's a rolling news feed essentially, but I get the impression that you can watch it like a video channel. And I think you hit upon something there, which is CNN and MSNBC and Fox News, they have the connections and breadth to find someone anywhere in the world to tell them what's happening, right? They have affiliates and agreements. this channel may not have that kind of reach, but I think it's what they're hoping is the advantage is you find out about stuff first on Twitter. So if you're like, oh my gosh, I just read on Twitter that this thing happened, instead of going and turning on the television, you'll hit them because they're right there. They're in the thing that you're looking at.
Well, and I think also think about from a production clarity standpoint, everybody who uploads video or live streams on Periscope, per the terms of the agreement, like that's all covered. Like they have the rights to all of that video. They don't have to negotiate. They don't have to wait to get stuff on. They don't have to hide behind this is a newsworthy event. That's why we're pinching somebody else's content. I'm certain that in the terms of service for Periscope, it says also we can take your publicly available video and put it on our channel. Yeah. So that could be astonishing because then all of a sudden you have instead of let's say 3,000 talented reporters, you have 300,000 or 300 million amateur reporters on everything.
So you're saying they would leverage like the stuff that's coming out of Twitter automatically from just civilians and put it on their show?
Sure,
yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
Well, and not even you could have the reporter be local to Bloomberg, explaining what's being seen on the feed that's coming from the amateur Periscope.
Right.
You wouldn't even need that amateur person to be a reporter, right?
Yeah.
The USFCC. This is yours, Brian.
That's fine.
Tell me what the USFCC is doing.
Oh man, let me tell you about the USFCC. They approved a new over-the-air standard called ATSC 3.0 that allows broadcasters to geolocate TV signals, transmit ultra HD, and allow for more interactive programming. ASTC 3.0 can target broadcasts, including advertising and emergency alerts on the street-by-street basis. Broadcasters will be required to continue the current system alongside the new system for 5 years. No current TVs support ATSC 3.0.
I can't get a read about how this is going to shake out because one of the things they could use it for is to bully people into no longer being able to just record over the air broadcast as a free replacement, right? They could do all kinds of things to kind of fight that cord cutter atmosphere there. They could also be using it because one of the things it can do is broadcast to a telephone over LTE. So they could be saying, you know, we don't care if it degrades the over-the-air broadcast on television. People are getting those from streaming services and cable anyway. We're going to go to phones. And it's not going to count against your data cap because it's broadcast over the air to your phone. And we're going to partner up with Verizon on stuff like that. There's a lot of positive things they can do here. They can turn on a TV in case of like a tornado and make sure people know like, hey, tornado warning, get out of your house, evacuation. They can also target by streets, like you said, for advertising and make sure that you get exactly the advertising they want you to.
Yeah. That's mildly creepy. I think a little tiny bit creepy.
Yeah,
what is the main aim of what they're trying to do with that? Since it can't even be used yet, what do you think their first thing they want to do with it is?
I'll tell you what, I actually don't know, but my gut says that all the creepy factor that we're feeling is us changing our expectations of privacy. Like I was thinking about, that Amazon Alexa being on at all times, or Amazon Echo being on at all times listening, that felt like a creepy thing 4 years ago. Now I'm mad that my Sonos doesn't listen to me all the time and I have to pull out my phone in order to tell it what music to play or whatever. I suspect that all the creepy aspects of this, we as a society are going to pivot on over the next 5 years. And the idea of a television turning itself on to warn of an impending natural disaster will only seem like a net good to us.
But what if they decide that you just, you know, they're maybe hooked into Amazon and decide that you've run out of Coca-Cola and they're going to send some to your house? You know, I mean, where does it stop? Like, where does that line stop?
I think never. And I think I'm okay with that. I'm still trying it on for size. I'm not sure.
Okay. We're not talking about ATSC 3.0 anymore at this point, right?
Yeah.
I don't think ATSC 3.0 is going to send Coke to your house.
ATSC stands for at the sweet Coke.
I guess this meant more like targeted advertising coming in, you know, like to remind you what to do because they know what you're buying or whatever. So that type of thing.
I already had a, this is a brief Sojourn, give me just a moment. I went to Reddit and looked at the difference between the served up sponsored top post when I was logged in versus not logged in. And not logged in, it was what you'd expect, just everyone advertising anything. But when I was logged in, I just kept hitting refresh and it says, hey, you want a new bicycle? I'm like, yeah, I love bikes. It's like, hey, do you want to brew beer? Oh man, I love beer. And it says, hey, did you get a DUI? And I was like, whoa. Like something about the
accusatory nature.
Yeah, not eight of the nine I did were exactly on target to my interest, and the ninth one was, yeah, so you got a DUI, right? Do you need to get that canceled or have your
you
legal
are
stuff?
A YouTuber who has multiple shows about drinking.
Look,
so.
I know, but it's like, whether or not they were right, the fact that I am in a club where I am expected to have a DUI soon was a terrifying realization. That's all I'm saying.
No, it is weird. And that is one of those weird effects is I know people, including my wife, who go into incognito mode to search for certain things because they don't want those ads to show up later.
Dude.
And not even embarrassing things, right? It's like, you know, I just want to find out how much it would cost to get a hotel room in Mauritania. I'm just curious. I don't want to see ads for Mauritania for the next 6 months. So I'm going into incognito mode.
For me, it's always incognito mode whenever I want to learn something about biology, because I like, how fast does multiple sclerosis, deteriorate? Sure. And it's like, I don't want to type that in on my profile because then it'll be all like dealing with MS.
Yeah, exactly. And then it's like, well, you know, no, I'm not. I was just curious about it. All right. Recode has a tool where you can put in channels you want, and it will show you which online streaming services carry those channels in a nice little grid. It compares DirecTV Now, Hulu, Philo, PS View, Sling TV, and YouTube TV. I know tons of you have been asking for this for years now, and this one works really well. I tried it out today.
Dude, that's fantastic. Full Screen Media is ending its subscription video service in January. Full Screen launched in April 2016 for $6 a month. Now it will be $0 and not around.
The shakeout begins. We're starting Comic-Con HQ changed its business model to free. No more subscription. Full Screen shutting down its service. Remember, we're like, CISO, how many of these CISO services went away. Can we support?
Yeah.
Well, not this many is the answer. All right, let's get to some dispatches from the front. Got all kinds of reactions to our email last episode about using MoviePass to drive up loyalty points. Some of them were very angry. We've got a couple of representative samples here. John points out that when you use MoviePass to artificially inflate points, the movie theater does lose out. One of MoviePass's big premises is, hey, the movie theater still gets their money, but if you use it to drive up points, the movie theater loses out because you're using points to buy their concessions, and concessions is where they make most of their money. Don Nodes in Richmond, Virginia said, I just finished listening to the episode in which you read the email from Joshua, where he says he buys tickets using MoviePass every day just to rack up loyalty points. Quick look at the MoviePass terms of service shows this is in fact against the terms of service. One of the items they list as a reason to terminate your account is, on more than one occasion during any 30-day period, you do not view the movie for which you purchased a ticket with your MoviePass card in its entirety. So if you did this, I mean, if he gets caught, he could have MoviePass suspended.
Yeah, I don't. What some of the more angry emails seem to indicate that there was a moral detriment to what he was doing. Like, well, you know, by doing this, you are causing the ruination of this, which I don't know if I feel like yes, if he's violating the terms of service, then, you know, he'll get caught and that'll be the end of it. But I don't know that I want to put the moral baggage on him. Like it's I feel like consumers are going to try to get away with what consumers can get away from. And if you put bad incentives, then you're going to get unfortunate results. And it seemed like, whether it was clear or not, you know, there's some incentives that the odds of him being caught are very, very low. So I don't understand why he wouldn't try to go for it.
I think we all have this sense of, we don't like it when someone goes against the spirit of a thing and ruins it for everybody, right? Like,
yes.
Most of us are not going to spend all of the time to buy 30 tickets a month and drive up the points. And if suddenly MoviePass goes away because this guy did that and it ruined it, then people are going to be angry. I think that's where the moral outrage comes from. I was operating like you under the terms of like, well, but if the plan is this way and you can take advantage of it, then they might be able to suspend you for it. But why not take advantage? That was before I realized he was in direct violation of the terms of service here, where MoviePass says, no, you can't buy the movie tickets and not go to the movie. Like they thought of this already. So he is breaking the rules.
Yeah, I guess maybe I'm on the darker side of this because I feel like, yes, even though he's violating the terms of service, it feels like this does smell like a good super couponing hack to that runs the risk of being found out and shut down and kicked out. But the odds of that seem fairly low at this point.
So, Christy, where do you stand?
I'm actually confused because I wasn't here last week. So he's buying movie tickets every day and not going to see the movie. What good does it do him?
His work, he gets reward points for every ticket. So there's a cinema in the same building complex where he works. So every day as part of his lunch lap, he gets a ticket to a movie that he doesn't bother to go to. So he gets reward points accrued. So now not only does he get free movies through MoviePass, he also gets pretty much unlimited concessions using the movie points that he garnered by buying tickets to movies that he never bothered to see.
Okay, so I get what he's doing, but isn't he spending money when he could just go buy a large
MoviePass. MoviePass, you pay a certain amount of money a month for unlimited movie tickets.
Yeah, $10 a month.
Okay. And then, to be fair, like, you're still, the movie theaters are still getting the full price ticket. It's no different than someone buying a movie and just not buying concessions and going watching a movie and not getting concessions.
Then when he uses the points to buy his concessions, he's getting concessions for free.
But it takes a lot of tickets for you to get those concessions too. Like I looked up the Regal points because I do the same thing, but I go and watch the movies. Like you have to you have to buy 7 tickets worth of movies to get a small popcorn, a $5 bag of popcorn, 7 movie tickets.
Yeah, like, that's a lot. You're talking about $70 that the movie theater gets.
Or they get a cut
of 7 tickets,
similar.
It's a similar ratio of like you have to go to a ton of movies before you get anything free. So,
While we're on the topic of MoviePass, Jeff writes in saying, I have to reverse my opinion that I tweeted to Tom and Brian earlier about MoviePass. It was a great company when it was $40 a month. The price cut and expansion with $10 a month has thrown all levels of customer service they used to have in the trash. As somebody who works in customer service, I'm a little less lenient in this area than some. I broke relations with a game developer from poor service regarding $15. But my partner and I have 2 different problems, and they won't respond to either of us. I have my card and no way to activate it. My partner has an activated card, but no physical card. We've tried Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, in addition to the in-app chat support and email, and no response from the company at all. It's been a rather disappointing experience since the business model changed for MoviePass.
Well, I don't think the business model changed. It's just a price cut, right? The business model is the same. They're just adding a little incentive to get more people into the tent. But if I'm just saying business model may not be the appropriate word for those out there in the audience who are going, that's not a business model. I'm acknowledging you. But his point, Jeff's point here, is perfectly appropriate, which is if you can't serve the customers by bringing in the customers, they're not going to stick around.
Yeah, that's one of those things where I could definitely relate with scam stuff. Some people wish that we were magically able to have lower prices, but it's a conscious decision that it's like we're going to have healthy margins. And the side effect of that is that we're going to be able to give exceptional one-on-one support to every single person. And when you cut the price from $40 down to $10, I can understand that would be one place where it's like, okay, we're no longer going to do hands-on making every person feel like a superstar. We're just going to, you know, handle the loudest problems with the simplest amount of work.
And just that the first person I've heard talk about this immediately following a price cut. There was the first price cut when they went from $40 a month down, and now they've just had another price cut this week. And it's not surprising to me that yet as they get that influx, right? It's hard to scale yourself to that.
Yeah. Mickey W. writes in from Brisbane, Australia. Hello, valued employees and guest. That's you, Christy. So I'm wondering what you think about the idea that Netflix is ahead of the game in international distribution, with the key being their Netflix Originals brand. With shows such as Peaky Blinders, The Expanse, and Star Trek Discovery all being branded as Netflix Originals outside of their home territories, it seems like Netflix is playing the long game worldwide to increase their prominence and their mind share with audiences, while other big media companies still haven't risen their eyes above the horizon and are just obsessively squabbling over the U.S. domestic market. Too long, did I read? Netflix is focusing on the rest of the world. Discuss! I think you're right, and to be honest, this isn't a new thing for Netflix, because keep in mind, their very first original was, what was it?
Lilyhammer,
yeah. Which was a Norwegian original that happened to be half a Norwegian, half an English, and they were able to position as a Netflix original.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we've talked about this in these terms before. Like, this is Netflix's current stage is, okay, as we reach saturation in the United States, we have to look outside our borders. And if we're going to be popular in these other places, we have to do what we did in the United States, come up with originals that are endemic to these regions that people like, which is why we're seeing the Khan produced show in India. It's why we're seeing that German show that we talked about last week for Germany, but everybody can see them. The idea of The Expanse, Peaky Blinders, Star Trek Discovery sort of shifting around is a good move for Netflix. We're like, well, maybe we can't show it in all regions, but it'll give us something good to get people in the tent. But I definitely think making originals that make the region's inhabitants very excited to subscribe there is a very good way to go about this. I think it's easy to see your own blinders as facts and say, well, all I ever hear Tom and Brian talk about is Hulu, CBS All Access, and US stuff. That doesn't mean that there are not companies outside of the US who are going farther. Hulu is an exception. Hulu is very US focused, and it will only be US focused. But CBS has all kinds of things going around on worldwide that we never talk about.
It seems like almost another reason that Netflix might be doing this. I have friends in Europe who complain that a lot of the stuff we get on US Netflix, they can't watch in their country. So maybe this is their kind of way of reaching out and saying, well, you know, you can't have these things. They're not licensed for Germany or the UK or whatever, but we've got all this other stuff that you can watch, which is great. So that's kind of a good move for them.
No, exactly. I think Netflix ideally would eventually like everything to be the same in every region, and mostly Netflix originals at that point.
Rob Lammers writes in saying, hey there, just a small note on the CW shows on Netflix. Tom said that the previous season's available the day the new season starts. However, they show up 8 days after the season ends. And he provided us a link about the new licensing deal and says, sorry if 400 people pointed this out, to which I say, no, just you.
And just Rob. Thank you, Rob, for the correction. Yeah. And that's not a new licensing deal. It's from 2016. I just remembered it wrong. So thank you, Rob, for correcting that. So you don't even have to wait till the next season. It's just 8 days after the current season ends.
Awesome.
Thank you, Rob. And thank you, Christy Gates.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Christy, you got all kinds of cool stuff going on. Tell folks about where they can find the other things you're doing.
I do. You can find, well, my hub is at ChristyGates.com, which is in the middle of being redesigned. You can always watch me on Twitter, because that's where I list everything that I'm doing, which is just Twitter.com Christy Gates. There we go. Thank you, Bryce. And on Twitch right now, I've been building my Twitch channel, and I'm amazed at how well it's going. I'm so grateful that everyone's coming to watch my music. I'm playing a song on Friday, or a show on Friday, and a show on Saturday each week. I'm going to be adding more in the new year, and we have a big Christmas special coming up too later in December. So it's been amazing. Been so great to be doing music over on Twitch. It's just been really fun.
So fantastic. So. How has it been to, because you've been playing music long enough to have experienced the live version of what Twitch approximates, right? One thing I've noticed as a performer is, like, I wish there was applause, because like actually hearing claps is different than you know, reading people saying you're doing very well, thank you,
or clap emoji.
Yes, exactly.
It took several weeks to get used to that, because I mean, I do play shows on occasion in New York City, and you know, that's just a normal show. You're on a stage and you're playing for people, and they're talking and applause, and they'll come up and talk to you afterwards. And the first like half dozen shows I did on Twitch were so odd, because you're like, you hit that last guitar chord or last piano chord, and then it's like, dead silence. Yeah. The chat's saying nice things, but your brain is wired to think, this, so, what I do? Is it bad? What's going on?
Well,
so
here's a new Twitch feature for you guys. They need to have the ability for people in the chat room to press a button that makes applause sounds come out on your end.
Yeah.
That would be cool. That's a good idea, Tom. You got to go tell somebody that. But yeah, it's been going really great, and I'm really, really happy with it. It's really nice. Twitch is a good medium for this. And it's funny because you think, you know, you go into Manhattan and you play a show and there's maybe 40 people there, perhaps. You go on Twitch and you can get, you know, if you hit the right night, you can get 1,000. You guys know you can get 1,000 people on your channel because
And the weird part is, even though you understand that 1,000 is more than 40, those 40 will feel more real to you in their responses than the vague understanding that 1,000 people apparently are largely saying nice things in the chat, yeah. You know? I wish there was just a hype button people could press. Like whenever they're feeling it, they just press that hype button. And then, you know, when it gets loud enough, you know, it triggers certain events or something.
Well, and the regulars are cool too, because through, you know, I have found through Twitch, you build up an audience of people that you recognize people, and you have like different categories of people, friends you know in real life or people you've met through stuff like Diamond Club or collaborating or whatever, and they come into the chat and they come on in every week, and it's like amazing. It's like your own little community, or you're just going to hang out with your friends on a weekend. It's really cool. Really, really cool.
That's awesome.
It's a lot of fun.
ChristyKates.com if you want to find out all this information. It's Christy with a K, Kates with a K, KristiKates.
Thanks, Tom.
Our website is cordkillers.com. Our email address is cordkillers@gmail.com. We're live on diamondclub.tv, Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. We will talk to you next time.
Hey, guys. Tom and Brian here. We just wanted to say thank you to all of our $5 patrons who keep us loud, live, and independent. You guys make Cord Killers the production that it is.
Your name appears in the video credits and appears in our hearts. And if you'd like to become one of them or see who they are, you can go to patreon.com/cordkillers.
You'll need to do more than just go there, though. You'll have to sign up and, you know, pledge an amount. But
unless you just want to see who they are.
Well, I mean, you can gawk. That's a little creepy, isn't it?
If you want to be a gawker,
let's go.
With you.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.